And sometimes the men, they live such hard lives. He ended up taking care of his baby by himself for the most part. His wife spends a lot of time gambling. She doesn't really support him. And she even thinks that he's homosexual because of the abuse. When he finally was able to tell her, instead of being supporting, instead of being a good friend and a good wife, she accused him of being gay. And this is how much of the town spends its free time, playing bingo. It's a form of gambling. And the town, it's so remote. It's such a small little town out in the middle of nowhere on this tiny island. There's no running water. There's no sewage system. So if people want hot water to bathe, they have to take a bucket on a sled and go to the water tank. This is a big water tank in the background. And the orange is from insulation that's been picked off. And I talk about this sometimes. I was telling you about it with the crosses. There's a lot more that goes into photography, into telling a good story through photographs than just the information that's in a photo. You have, when you take photos, you have this wonderful tool at your disposal, the camera, and it has the ability, and you have the ability as a photographer, to accomplish so much with that camera. And more than just the information that's in the picture, you can make reference, you can use metaphor, you can create tone and mood, and those are all part of the content of a picture. When I thought about this photo, I had seen it on many times, and I knew I wanted to make a picture here because I thought it was very interesting. As I spent a lot of time in this town, it felt to me that the people who had gone through this abuse were living in a kind of purgatory, that they were straddling the line between Earth, this life, and some kind of hell, some kind of awful place. And I thought about these flames, the flames of hell, and the contrast between this cold environment. And one night, as the sun was setting, it really illuminated the orange from this water tank. And I think that's what's so great about photography, is that you can say so much more. You know, on a very basic level, it's just a picture of a guy carrying some water. But it can be so much more than that. This is actually on our first day arriving in the town, and our car went off the road. So by the end of the story, we came to discover, this one's sort of hard to tell. There's a tiny little restaurant, and it's the only social outlet in the whole town, the only place where kids can go to hang out. So we went there because we spent a lot of time in the place and we wanted to get to know every part of the town. And at the end, so these are all the children of all of these abuse victims. So we went there and we found that all the kids from the town like to spend time there. And the person running this restaurant seemed very strange to us. This is the reporter and I. And so we did some investigation, and we did a background check on him, and come to discover that he is also a sex offender, a former convicted sex criminal. And so all of the children in this town, the offspring of the people who had suffered at the hands of this brother Joe, were now in danger of being molested again by the owner of this restaurant. And we just couldn't believe it. It was like the cycle was starting all over again. It was a very strange ending to this story. And the new pastor, this is Father Stan, he had very, very hard work ahead of him. He had this really horrible past to deal with, and he was not welcomed by this town, and it was very hard for him to try to do his job. And if you can see in the background, this is Tommy going to visit his brother's grave. This is the entire town, all this grouping of houses, and that's what the town looks like.
So I'd like to show this other story next, because I want to contrast two very different working conditions that you will find working as a photojournalist. So in the summer of 2006, a small patrol of Israeli military was attacked on the northern border of Israel, Israel's border with Lebanon, and two soldiers were kidnapped by Hezbollah guerrillas. This launched a six-week war between the two factions, between the two sides, in which, on a daily basis, Hezbollah fired rockets indiscriminately into northern Israeli towns, killing people at random. And Israel returned with massive bombardment of Lebanese infrastructure and Hezbollah targets and civilian targets. So my assignment was to cover the Israeli side. I knew going into it that the major news was going to be coming out of Lebanon, because Israel was using such massive force in its response, in its attempts to try to secure the release of these two soldiers. It pummeled Lebanon, destroyed so much of its infrastructure all the way up to Beirut, from southern Lebanon. So I knew that the major news was going to be coming from Israel, from Lebanon, but nevertheless, my assignment was to cover what was happening in Israel. And it was a very strange sort of conflict to cover, because on any given day, you never really knew what was going to happen. This would be the general routine. You would wake up in the morning, start to go out and do some of your reporting, try to track down some of the residents, see what life was like there, and every day around midday, the sirens would go off in the town, and the rockets would start to fall, and they would fall, they could fall anywhere, they could fall on your house, on your car, on your neighbor's house, you never knew. At one point, a rocket came so close to me, it was within me, you know, from here to the end of the classroom. See it coming down. So there's very strange things to cover, and there weren't massive destruction like there was in Lebanon, but you could still see how people, how it affected their lives, how they were terrorized by these daily events. I don't know if you can imagine what it would be like if every day when you woke up, you didn't really know if a bomb was going to come down and fall on your head. It's a very strange feeling. So what I ended up doing is spending a lot of time covering funerals. It's something, it's one of my least favorite things to do. And I wanted to contrast it with covering the Alaska story, because working in Alaska, I'm going to fast forward just for a second. I'll come back. Working in Alaska, it was such a personal story, and it was so quiet, and it required lots of patience, lots of talking, really getting to know the subjects well, very intimate. And covering this story in Israel was so chaotic. The character of each nation's press is very different, and in Israel, the press is very, very aggressive. And you know, at a funeral like this, where they're carrying the boy's body who was killed, if you can imagine what it's like behind the camera, behind me, there's dozens of photographers all smashed together, fighting. People are so aggressive; they're trying to knock you out of the way. They'll step on you, push you over. And if you don't hold your ground, if you don't fight back and hold yourself, they'll step on you. They'll walk right over you. And it's just it's not like it's personal. It's not like they're trying to do anything to you. It's just the way things are there. It's the way things are done. And when you go to cover foreign news, when you leave the comfort of your home country to go cover news across the world, you have to be prepared that things are going to be different, and you have to be able to adapt to them. I'll go back to see each other. So we spent time covering, you know, everything I could in Israel surrounding this conflict. And you know, when I'm covering a story like this, I'm always looking for those little details that tell a story. You know, a funeral in Israel is very different from a funeral of all the funerals that I've ever seen in the United States, where they're very calm. Everyone's wearing a suit, and it's a very quiet and somber affair. And in Israel, it's everyone participates. It's very loud. People are shouting. People get down on their hands and knees and get into the dirt, and they pick up the dirt with their hands to put on top of the body. And I found it so interesting. It's so different from the way things are where I'm from. And I was looking for little details to tell that, like the dirt on the man's hand, just to show that he has this personal connection, that he's digging in the dirt to bury his friend. And try to get across to what it's like waiting for a family, waiting in a bomb shelter, not knowing what's going to happen, not knowing if your children are going to be in danger, if your family might get killed, not knowing when you're going to be able to come out of this hole in the basement. This is tanks rolling into southern Lebanon. This is just surrounded by dust. I just like to pay attention to people's faces too. I mean, at some point, there's not a lot happening during this conflict. There's a lot of waiting around. In Israel, it's a mandatory service for the military, so most of the soldiers that are serving in the Israeli army are children. You know, they're young adults. They're probably about the same age as you guys here, but they are in a very different situation, and they find themselves, this is an artillery position, shooting shells into Lebanon. And I love to look at the faces, the looks on their faces, and they have the looks of men who have been through war, and have seen very, very difficult things, although they're just they're younger than me. They're you know, just college kids, basically. It's just, it's a very difficult thing. You know, I wasn't really used to covering a lot of funerals, and I wasn't used to being part of a press that was so aggressive and it's always pushing to get closer and closer. So it was something that I really had to figure out. Also, I had to figure out how to stay, to be myself in that situation, to still feel like I wasn't just becoming another obnoxious, aggressive photographer like everybody else, that I was still maintaining the same kind of rules that I always hold for myself in any other situation, in the midst of what was often a really crazy situation that I didn't have much control over. And I guess the only way I would do that is just you know, following some of the same rules that I do in any other case, in any other circumstance. And it's subtle little things about the way you interact with the people you're photographing, about being as non-confrontational as you can, about being as calm and quiet, and try to attract as little attention as possible, as much as you can, to try to blend into the surroundings, although it's very, very difficult in cases like this. You know, a lot of students have asked too about if it's the right thing to do to show a picture like, you know, something like this. This is a mother who's lost her son, and this is at her funeral. And so is that the proper thing to do, to show a picture of a woman, a mother, at such a difficult time, you know, after she's lost her son? And my answer is yes, absolutely. Like I said, the way I introduced this whole thing is the way we tell stories at the newspaper, the way we tell people about what's happening in the world, and the way we make people feel something about what's happening in this world is through the eyes of people. And if you just said in a couple words that Sergeant so-and-so-and-so died today in an attack, there's no way for you to understand how that affects people. What that means for anyone, it's just a name. You know nothing about that person. You don't know anything about who is surviving that person. But seeing this woman in her grief lets you know that this person is missed and is loved, and that what has happened actually means something to somebody, and that's very important. And this other story, this is a story I worked on for the Los Angeles Times. I'm just going to read you a little introduction from the story itself.